Be ready to be motivated. Today's episode, we are talking with a person that was diagnosed and has been battling a rare form of cancer, and that is just the start of his medical issues. Today, we learn more about motivation. Thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More. It's Russ with you. Today, we are talking about motivation, right? We all need a little bit of that sometimes. And I have a perfect person to talk to me about that. Terry Tucker. He's an author, a motivational speaker, and a cancer warrior. Terry, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me on, Russ. I'm looking forward to talking with you.
Yeah, you know, I have been looking forward to talking to you since I saw your information and saw your book, saw your website. I'm like, okay, I got to get this guy on and I've got to talk to him. So I thank you so much for joining me. Now, in looking and you know, looking at your history here, you've done a lot. You've had a lot of different jobs. Let's start there. I mean, we're not going to do this isn't a job interview. It's just it's an interview on motivation, but let's talk about some of those career shifts that you've done in the past.
Yeah. I look at my resume sometimes and think, you know, one of these days I got to figure out what I'm going to do when I grow up. You know, I mean, I have had a fairly diverse background. So graduated from the Citadel in Charleston, South Carolina, and you know, kind of moved home to find a job. I'm really going to date myself, but this was long before the internet was available, you know, to help people find a job. And I was the first person in my family to actually graduate from college. So I was all set to make my mark on the world with my newly obtained business administration degree. Fortunately, I did find that first job. It was in the corporate headquarters of Wendy's International, the hamburger chain. Unfortunately, I ended up living with my parents for the next 3.5 years as I helped my mom care for my father and my grandmother, who were both dying of different forms of cancer. So first job is at Wendy's, then I became a hospital administrator, and then I made a major pivot in my life and became a police officer in Cincinnati, Ohio. And, you know, I did the usual run a beat in a marked car, and then I became an undercover narcotics investigator. I was on the SWAT team as a hostage negotiator. Oh, wow. And then I started my own school security consulting business. Probably not the best move I ever made, but in 2019 started a motivational speaking business, you know, which again, probably, like I say, not the best move I did. 2020 published my first book. But as you say, for the last 10 years or so, I've been dealing with this very rare form of cancer. So yeah, I've kind of been all over the place with my employment, but it's been a lot of fun and I've learned a lot.
Now you mentioned the cancer diagnosis. So you have a rare form of cancer. Tell us about that.
I do. I have a rare form of melanoma that appears on the bottom of the feet or the palms of the hands. And most people think of melanoma as, you know, you're out in the sun too much. There's too much sun exposure. And, you know, I sort of joked with my oncologist. I'm like, I don't even remember laying out in the sun when I was young with my feet up in the air, tanning the bottom of my feet. But that's where mine started. I was a basketball coach in Texas, and I had a callus break open on the bottom of my foot, right below my third toe. And initially, I didn't think much of it because being a coach, you're on your feet a lot. But after a couple of weeks of it not healing, I went to see a podiatrist, a foot doctor friend of mine, and he took an x-ray and he's like, Terry, I think you have a little cyst in there and I can cut it out. And he did. And he showed it to me. It's just a little gelatin sac with some white fat in it. No dark spots, no blood, nothing that gave either one of us concern. But fortunately, he sent it off to pathology. And then 2 weeks later, I got a call from him. And as I mentioned, he was a friend. And the more difficulty he was having telling me what was going on, the more frightened I was becoming until he just kind of laid it out for me. He said, Terry, I've been a doctor for 25 years. I have never seen this form of cancer. You have this rare form of melanoma. And he said, you know, I think you should go to MD Anderson in Houston and be treated for it.
Wow. And
that was just the start.
That was just the start.
So I did. I went to MD Anderson. I had the bottom of my foot excised. I had all the lymph nodes in my groin removed. And then when I healed, my oncologist put me on a weekly injection of a drug called interferon. And the side effects for interferon were that I got severe flu-like symptoms for 2 to 3 days every week after each injection.
Oh, geez.
And I took those weekly injections for almost 5 years. So imagine having the flu every week for 5 years. And that wasn't a cure. That was, as my oncologist used to say, we're trying to kick the can down the road to buy you some more time. 2017, I ended up in the intensive care unit with a body temperature, a fever of 108 degrees, which was from the toxicity of the interferon. So fortunately, I was able to be saved, because usually 108 degrees is not compatible with being alive.
Right.
So I had to stop the interferon in 2017. And almost immediately, the cancer came back in the exact same spot on my foot where it had presented 5 years ago. And my only recourse in 2018 was the amputation of my left foot. The cancer worked its way up my shin in 2019, two more surgeries. And then in 2020, an undiagnosed tumor kind of in my ankle area, I guess, grew large enough that it fractured my tibia, my shin bone. And my only recourse right in the middle of the pandemic was to have my left leg amputated above the knee. And I also found out I had tumors in my lungs, and I'm still being treated for those tumors right now. And I know that sounds like a very ugly and dark story, and it certainly has been. But in all honesty, Russ, cancer has made me a better human being.
Why do you say that?
Because I've learned stuff. I learned what was important in life. I learned, you know, that a lot of the obstacles that we put we encounter in our lives, we put there ourselves. It was amazing when I found out I had cancer. People were like, "Well, who do you blame?" And I was like, "What do you mean? Who do I blame?" So, well, I mean, we're great as a society of, you know, okay, I'm working towards my goals, but then I run up against an impediment and we quit and we give up. And then we've got to blame somebody. You know, we got to blame mom or dad or our boss or our station in life. Very few people want to take responsibility for their own success and happiness. So people were like, "Well, who do you blame?" Like, I don't blame anybody. I'm like, "Well, you got to blame God." And I'm like, "Well, I sort of joke. I'm like, well, I don't think God got up on a Tuesday morning, checked his to-do list and said, Terry Tucker, cancer. I don't believe that at all. But what I do believe, and I have a very strong faith, is that God gave me the ability to weather these last 10 years. So I don't blame anybody for this. And the way I look at it is, these are the cards that I've been dealt, and I have to play them to the best of my ability. Does this suck? It absolutely sucks. But I've embraced the suck, and I try to do the best I can every day.
Wow. Yeah. How do you've got the cancer treatment, you've got the fear, you've got the uncertainty that comes along with the diagnosis and with the treatment. And you're dealing with being sick 3 to 4 days a week for such a long period of time. How do you get to that point of where you're not blaming, where you're not, you know, being upset? How did you do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, when I first found out I had this cancer, I think I went through all the stages that I guess most people would associate with grief. You know, there's sort of the denial, and then there's, you know, you're bargaining with God, and then you're mad and everything, you know, and I went through all that and I was like, well, okay, none of that's working. So I'm just going to have to accept this and play the cards that I have been dealt. And I'll be honest with you, when I was on interferon, I was so sick of being sick that I literally prayed to die. I mean, I was literally like, God, okay, I can't deal with this. I am done with this. Please take me out of this. And he didn't, you know, and it was like, well, okay, now I've got a choice, you know, and Russ, I guess the way I look at it is this: we're all going to experience pain in our lives, and it doesn't have to be cancer pain or a chronic illness or anything like that. It could be, you know, you break up with your boyfriend or your girlfriend, or you don't get the promotion at work that, you know, you think you deserve, or, you know, you have a fender bender on the way to, you know, wherever you're going. Pain is inevitable in our lives. Suffering, on the other hand, suffering's optional. Suffering's what you do with that pain. Do you use it to make you a stronger and more determined individual? Or do you wallow in it and feel sorry for yourself and want other people to feel sorry for you? Now, I mean, you're looking at me right now. There's no S on my chest. I don't wear a cape. I mean, I have bad days. I cry. I get down. I feel sorry for myself. And when I do, I remember two stories. And hang with me on this, because this first one's going to start out kind of weird. I remember reading about a professor back in the 1950s at Johns Hopkins University who did a very simple experiment with rats. He took rats and he put them in a tank of water that was over their head. and he wanted to see how long the rats could tread water. And the average rat treaded water for about 15 minutes. And just as the rats were getting ready to sink and drown, he reached in, grabbed them, pulled them out, dried them off, let them rest for a while, and then he put them back in that exact same tank of water. And the second time around, those rats treaded water for 60 hours. Think about that. 15 minutes, that's all I can do. And I'm going to drown. My life is over. Second time around, 60 hours, which said to me two things. Number one, the importance of hope in our lives. We have to believe, you know, that our lives, whatever we're doing, is going to lead us to a better life. And the second thing is, it's just how much more our physical bodies can handle than we ever thought they could. I have a friend who's a former Navy SEAL, some of the toughest men in the world. And the SEALs talk about their 40% rule, which basically says, if you're at the end of your rope and you don't think you can go on, you're only at 40% of your maximum. And you still have another 60% left to give to yourself. So whenever I get into those dark places, I just remember those two stories. And for me, that works to keep me moving forward.
Yeah. Well, I remember one time I was, you know, I had just started a business. Things weren't going great in the beginning. I quit my day job so that I could focus on the business, and I was scared, you know, like there was a lot of fear there. And, you know, it was a DJ company, and I go to San Francisco. There was a Tower Records out there, you know, Tower Records kids, if you're listening, records are these things that play music. It's like an MP3. but I would go out to Tower Records in the city. It was the discount Tower Records, and I would go there. And if you didn't get there first thing in the morning, you were going to miss out on the new releases. So I went there. It was a Tuesday morning. They put out a bunch of music, and I'm sitting out front waiting. And I see there's, you know, a police officer with a man, and they've got a tarp over the man, and I'm assuming it's a homeless person because of the, you know, the scenario looks. It looks like that was the case. A black truck shows up. They take the man away. He was clearly, you know, there was no rush. He was clearly gone already. And it's like, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself as I'm, you know, about to go into this record store, I'm like, okay, is my life really that bad? Like, I'm not there. I'm not dead. I'm not like, you know, homeless. And there's somebody out there that where, you know, his family may not even know that he had passed. Like they might not even be able to identify this person, who he is. He might not have any identification, and he's just gone. Like I thought about that. And that day was a huge change in my mind. And actually, I think that day helped to make my business successful. It helped me to take a little bit more risk in my business. And it helped me to realize like, you know what, if it's bad, it's not that bad, you know? And it's like, it's funny how those little moments can hit you. That hit me right away. For you, how long did it take you to go from the diagnosis to becoming a motivational speaker, to take that path to help to motivate others?
Well, I never really wanted to go down this path. I mean, it wasn't something that that I consciously, you know, was like, well, you know, I'm sort of plotting it and figuring it out and things like that. And, you know, there's sort of the old joke that goes, you know, when we talk to God, it's called prayer. When God talks to us, it's called schizophrenia. So I don't want anybody to think that God spoke to me. But I think what God has done throughout my life, not just with this, is that, you know, I mean, I remember laying in bed after I had my foot amputated, kind of looking at the ceiling like, all right, I have no goals. I have no motivation. I have no, I'm like, where do I go? You know, like, okay, come on, tell me what you want me to do. And there was, you know, the heavens didn't open and nobody said anything or like that. But what did happen is people were like, hey, Terry, you ought to write a book. And I was like, oh, right, I'm not a writer, you know? And then another person would say it. And then another person would say it. And I think I'm smart enough to realize that when enough people start making these suggestions, that maybe I ought to kind of perk up and say, maybe right. That's something I do. I mean, the same thing with my blog. People were like, hey, you ought to start a blog. You know, I mean, you have all these great quotes and things like that. You ought to start. I said, I'm old. I can barely turn my cell phone on in the morning. What do you mean start a blog? And I mean, when I did start Motivational Check, my blog, it was 4 pages. And honest to God, Russ, it took me 4 months to do it. I mean, I had no idea what I was doing. I would go somewhere and be like, I don't know what that means. You know, and it, so I'd have to go look. I'm sure my 25-year-old daughter could have done it in about 15 minutes. It took me 4 months, but enough people started making the suggestion that I thought, maybe that's something I ought to look into. And so that's really kind of, you know, people are like, well, you ought to speak. And, you know, I'm like, well, okay, maybe I'll do that. And that was 2019. And then the pandemic hits and nobody's, you know, hiring motivational speakers and that. So how do I morph that business? How do I do that? Well, there's podcasts. And I remember the first time somebody suggested, it's like, you know, hey, would you be a guest in my podcast? I was like, what's a podcast? I mean, how does this work? Right. I didn't know. And I was scared like you, you know, it's like, this is new. I'm scared. I'm nervous. What do I do? I had all these notes all around my computer and my camera. And it's, you know, cause like, boy, I better know what I'm doing. And, you know, part of it was reading, you know, I'm talking here and I'm reading notes over it. And it's like, it was terrible. I mean, my first couple podcasts were terrible, but you learn. And, you know, and I always tell this, especially for young people, if there's something in your heart, something in your soul that you believe you should do, but it scares you, go ahead and do it. Because at the end of your life, the things you're going to regret are not going to be the things you did. They're going to be the things you didn't do. And by then it's going to be too late to go back and do them.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, if you listen to my first couple of podcasts, also terrible. I think that's everything, you know, and that's the thing too. I mean, even if you're terrible at first at something, if you don't feel good about it, doing it over and over, you're going to get better. Like it's going to get to a place where you're way more comfortable with it. You know, like for me, just sharing the little story there, you know, about the person that I saw that died, like sharing that story, like I wouldn't have done that in the first couple of episodes of this just because I didn't feel comfortable enough to do that. And it's funny how as you keep doing things, it does get a little bit easier. And I think the other thing is optimism sort of gets easier if you're generally optimistic about something, because you seem so optimistic about all of this. You seem and there's plenty to not be optimistic about, but you seem very much that way. Are you optimistic about your future and about, you know, like the next steps, whatever they are for you?
I mean, yes and no. My oncologist showed me my CAT scans back in 2020 when I had my leg amputated, when I had first found out we had tumors in my lungs, and I have no medical background. So, I mean, but I kind of know what should and shouldn't be there. And I mean, I had fluid all around the pleural spaces, the space between, you know, my outside of my lung and my chest cavity. I had these big tumors in my lungs. And I remember looking at my oncologist, like, how was I alive? And he kind of, you know, sort of smirked. And he was like, I don't know. I don't know how you're alive, which said to me that, you know what, God's not done with me yet. You know, should I have been dead? Absolutely. Should have been dead. You know, I mean, literally was being transferred, being moved over to palliative care to kind of, you know, the precursor of hospice. I was coughing up all this bloody phlegm. And then all of a sudden it's go ahead and do chemotherapy. And I remember when I had my leg amputated, my doctor wanted to start me on chemotherapy. And I asked him, is it going to save my life? And he was like, probably not, but it might buy you some more time. And I'm like, well, you know, I was 8 years into this journey at that time. And I was kind of like, I'm not sure I really want to do that. I said, but I'll go home and I'll talk to my family. And so I go home and I start telling my wife and daughter, my daughter's immediate. And I, this is, it's kind of a funny story, but it really did happen this way. My daughter's like, okay, we need a family meeting. I'm like, family meeting? There's three of us. You know, it's not like we got a board here or something like that, you know? And so we all sit around the kitchen table and talk about our different perspectives of me having chemotherapy. And then when we're done, you know, our daughter's like, all right, let's take a vote. How many people want dad to have chemotherapy? And my wife and my daughter raised their hand. And I'm like, wait a minute. Am I getting outvoted, you know, for something I don't want to do?
Right.
But I remembered back when I was in the police academy and our defensive tactics instructor used to have us bring a photograph of the people we love the most to class. And as we were learning different techniques to defend ourselves, we were to look at that photograph because he reasoned you will fight harder for the people you love than you will fight for yourself. So I ended up taking chemotherapy, not because I wanted to, but because I love my family more than I love myself. And in hindsight, it was probably the right thing to do because it's led me to this point. And now I'm on a clinical trial drug that most likely won't save my life, but very well may save the life of somebody else, you know, five, 10 years from now that I won't even know, but at least it'll make my life have that much more meaning.
When you're talking about, you're at peace with this, right? How about your family? How are they taking this?
Yeah, I think any kind of a terminal or chronic illness tends to isolate you from the people you care about, from the people you love. I mean, sometimes it's just physical isolation. Like when I was on interferon, you know, I really couldn't be around people because, I mean, you know, it's like, hey, excuse me for a minute, I'm going to go throw up. I mean, that's not something that, you know, you invite your friends over to watch or anything like that. But, you know, this is kind of funny as well. When my wife met me and we first got married, my wife had never seen the inside of an emergency room, never been to a hospital, never anything. And yet years later, you know, I remember having part of my foot cut out and it was an outpatient procedure. And literally my wife is down at the end of the table talking to the doctor while the doctor's doing this. I'm like, there's no way she would have been able to do that when we first got married. But, you know, she's developed a certain amount of resiliency. I think my daughter has to a point. I mean, my daughter kind of figures as long as I'm living or talking and breathing, I'm okay. So she's, she's 25 years old. She really hasn't experienced a lot of life and certainly not a lot of death. Although, you know, I got sick when she was 15. So she does, she has that component of it, but I'm still here. You know, I didn't think I was going to live long enough to see her graduate from high school, but I did. And then my next goal was I want to see her, you know, graduate from college. And I did. And then I wanted to walk her down the aisle last October with my prosthetic leg, which I did. So I've had these milestones and she's been part of it with me, but it's not easy. I deal with the physical pain. They deal with the isolation, the emotional pain, dad's got to go have this done, but I can't do anything but sit here and wait. Yeah. And for me, that hurts me more than the physical pain that I have to go through.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's always been the case for me. I always feel like, you know, taking somebody to the doctor, I feel like is like, oh, man, I just it's so difficult to do that because, you know, when they're going in for a surgery or they're going in for, you know, whatever it is, it's like, oh, it's so hard. So I can only imagine, you know, what they're going through. And then the flip side of it is, yeah, you're thinking about them. Which, none of it is easy. None of it is easy. No. If you could go back in time to, you know, the start of all of this before the diagnosis, what would you tell yourself?
That's a great question. I'd probably tell myself that you're a whole lot tougher than you think you are. Mm-hmm. Because I really believe that. And you know, I've had people that have approached me and said, you know, have read about my story or, you know, have heard me on a podcast and heard my story. I'm like, Terry, I could never do what you did. I could never go through with what you've gone through. And I don't mean to be a smart aleck, but sometimes I am, you know, and I kind of look at them like, yeah, you're right. You could, because you've already decided in your head, in your mind that you can't do this. And I think that's the biggest issue. I was fortunate enough to play, you know, college basketball and I played high school basketball with a guy by the name of Isaiah Thomas, who went on and played it at Indiana, won a national championship for Bobby Knight, and then went on to play for the Detroit Pistons and won a couple NBA championships. And I remember talking to Isaiah Thomas about Bobby Knight. And he said, you know, Knight had a great saying, and it was this. He said, you know, mental is to physical as 4 is to 1. And he said, you know, here's this guy who's, you know, training these elite athletes to be great with their bodies. But what he's really saying is your mind is 4 times more important than the physical aspect, your physical body. And I think about that all the time. I think about how, you know, and this is going to be a huge generalization. I don't want to get you in trouble, but I'm going to say it anyway. We are soft in this country. We are so soft, you know, that hurts, or, oh, I don't want to do that, or that's uncomfortable. I don't want to do that. I mean, if you have even a small amount of grit, you're going to be so much farther down the road than the vast majority of people who, like I said, never want to take responsibility for their own success and happiness. So I guess I would just tell myself that Terry, you're a whole lot tougher than you think you are, and you can handle a whole lot more pain and discomfort than, you know, you think you can. And I think I've proven that to be true just on all the things that I've been through.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I hear your story and it's amazing. I mean, it's amazing that you're able to even just talk about it and share it. And in sharing that, you're also, you know, you're leaving behind a legacy. What do you want that legacy to be?
Yeah, I've been asked that a couple of times. You know, how do you want to be remembered? And I don't. I don't want to be remembered. I mean, I don't have any great, I mean, nobody's going to name a street after me or a basketball court after me or anything like that. I guess the way I look at it is this. You know, I started playing basketball when I was 9 years old, and I played all the way up until I graduated from college when I was 21. And I think one of the things that team sports taught me, and I think hopefully it teaches a lot of people, is the importance of being part of something that's bigger than yourself. And you realize on a team that if you don't do your job, not only do you let yourself down, but you let your teammates down, your coaches down, your fans down, et cetera. And if you think about it, the biggest team game that we all play is this game of life. And I remember I had a nurse, when I first met this nurse, she was about 25 years old. She was already a nurse, but she was training on the unit where I get my treatment. And a couple months ago, she was taking care of me by herself. And she said, Terry, I've got a story I want to tell you, but I'm a little uncomfortable. And I didn't really know how to respond to that. It's like, well, I hope you tell me. I'd be interested in hearing it. And she finally got up the courage to tell me. She said, when I first met you, I was going to get out of nursing. She said, I had a very good friend of mine die, and I was in a really dark place. And I talked to my mom and dad. I was going to quit nursing, and I was going to go to work for Amazon. And then I met you. And I watch what you go through every day. I watch how these treatments, you know, make you throw up and shake and you have a fever and they're just ugly. And I read your history of everything you've been through, and yet you keep coming back. And she said, and I knew I was where I was supposed to be. Now, if she would have never told me that story, I would have had no idea that my life had impacted her in such a positive way. And so I always kind of keep that in the back of my mind. You know, Russ, who's out there that would love to be like you, who would love to be in your shoes, who would love to be moderating a podcast or been in radio or, you know, the things you've done in your life? Who wants to be like me? Who wants to be like other people? And I don't think we think about that too much. John Wooden, the former coach of UCLA in the 70s when I was growing up, had a great saying, and it went like this: a careful person I want to be, a little person follows me. I dare not go astray for fear they may go the same way. So, I mean, maybe this treatment that I'm on, like I say, is going to help somebody 5 years from now, 10 years from now, when I'm not going to be here anymore. But the doctors are gleaning so much data from my blood tests, from my scans and things like that, that hopefully this drug will morph into something that can help another human being. And I guess for me, I guess that's as good enough as a legacy as anything else.
Yeah. Well, I think also, you know, what you've done with your book and, you know, with your website and, you know, with your podcast visits and all of the, you know, I mean, it's a tragic story in some ways, but it's very motivational and very enlightening. It's very like, it's an uplifting story, which sounds weird, right? It sounds weird to say that, but to hear that you have gone through so much makes it easier for people to go through some of those little things. And, you know, I mean, if somebody's listening to this and they're going through something similar and they hear you talking about it, I mean, I just feel like that makes it easier for them as well. So I think you're helping people not just in that you know, potential physical way with the medicine and the trials, but also in the emotional way by sharing your story. And so I really do appreciate you sharing that story. Now, if people, we haven't even mentioned the book, because I got right into it with you, and I just got so I got so into it. But let's talk about the book a little bit.
Yeah. So the book is called Sustainable Excellence, The 10 Principles to Leading Your Uncommon and Extraordinary Life. And it was a book born out of two conversations I had, because I said, you know, a lot of people were making this suggestion, you should write a book. And I was really kind of, you know, putting it off and saying, I shouldn't do this. But eventually got to a point where it's like, well, maybe I'd at least explore it. So one of the conversations was with a former player of mine who I had coached in high school, and she and her fiance had moved to the Colorado area where my wife and I live. And we had dinner with him one night. And I remember saying to her, you know, I'm really excited that you're living close and I can watch you find and live your purpose. And she got real quiet for a while. She kind of looked at me and she said, well, coach, what do you think my purpose is? I said, I have no idea what your purpose is, but that's what your life should be about. Finding the reason you were put on the face of this earth, using your unique gifts and talents, and living that reason. So that was one conversation. And then I had a young man in college who reached out to me on social media and asked me what I thought were the most important things he should learn to not just be successful in his job or in business, but to be successful in life. And I didn't want to give him the, you know, get up early, work hard, help others. Not that those aren't important. Those are tremendously important. But I wanted to see if I could go deeper with him. So I took some time and I wrote some notes. And eventually I had these 10 thoughts, these 10 ideas, these 10 principles. And so I sent them to him. And then I kind of stepped back and I was like, well, you know, I got a life story that fits underneath this principle, or I know somebody whose life emulates that principle. So literally during the 3-month period that I was healing from my amputation of my leg till the time I started chemotherapy for the tumors in my lungs, I sat down at the computer every day and I literally built stories underneath each of the principles. And that's how sustainable excellence came to be.
That's awesome. Okay. And you mentioned the blog. It took a little while to get together, the 4 pages, but you've expanded it much beyond 4 pages and you've done a ton with that. By going to the blog, what are we going to see?
So the blog is, there's a thought for the day, every day. And they're not my thoughts. There's stuff I pull from, you know, could be, you know, go back as far as ancient Greece or Rome, Stoic philosophy. You know, it could be something more. The one I put up this morning was from Frank Zappa, you know, who was a musician, you know, and things like that. So, I mean, they're all just different kinds of quotes about different things. And so I put a daily quote or thought for the day up. And then I also put a question with it to kind of like, how can this thought impact your life during this day? Think about that. And then on Mondays, I put up the Monday morning motivational message, which a lot of times is a video or a story. But I understand people's time is at a premium. So, I always say, if you need a quick hit of inspiration or motivation, go to motivationalcheck.com and get that and then get on with your day. You can access my book there. You can access my social media sites. You can leave me a note. And I respond to everybody who responds, you know, who sends me a note. So I love hearing people, especially, you know, as an author, because, you know, I've got these 10 principles. And it's funny because whenever somebody reads the book, there's always one principle that resonates with them. And the principles are not in any order. Number one is not any more important than number 7 or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But there's always one principle that they're like, you know, hey, number 5 is the one I really liked, or, you know, number 8 really got it for me. So it's fun for me to see that, you know, when people read it, they reach out to me and let me know.
That's awesome. And what I'll do, I'll link to the book, I'll link to your website, and also, if it's okay, I'll link to your LinkedIn so that people can reach out to you and talk to you further.
Absolutely.
Awesome. I will do that. Thank you, Terry, so much for joining me today and sharing your story with us.
Well, thanks, Russ, for having me. I always say it's nice people like you that allow me to come on and tell my story. And hopefully between our conversation today, we're going to make a difference in somebody's life. And nice. If we do, today's been a good day.
Yes. Yes, it has. And, you know, man, doing this podcast is so fantastic because I get to learn something new every single week. And so do you. If you listen each week, you subscribe. And yeah, of course, you know, you do that little rating thing. That always helps as well. I started this mission of learning something new every single week a few years back. And it's like expanded because of the show where I get to talk to cool people like Terry. Each week is a different topic. It's a diverse set of topics. Now, while many podcasts focus on like one or two little subjects, I like to be a little more broad with the topics. And proof of that is what we're going to talk about next week, because one of my interests, and it's not because of the conspiracy stuff, it's because of the media stuff, actually. Well, maybe a little of the conspiracy stuff too. But next week, we get to talk about JFK, the assassination, and stories that have been unheard. Yeah, those stories are coming out in a brand new book, and we get to talk with one of the authors next week. So very excited about that one as well. If you have an idea for an episode of Learning More, well, head over to our website at learningmorepodcast.com. You can make suggestions, and hey, you can also like give me feedback. I'd love to hear that as well. By the way, as with any podcast that gives medical or legal opinion, the information is not meant to substitute professional advice. We encourage you to consult a professional to discuss your exact needs. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. I'm Russ, and I look forward to learning more with you next time.